15 to 20 million.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio. Also heard on the world by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link, and you'll be able to hear us for the next hour. And by the way, as you know, you can hear us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by going to American Workers Radio and click on the Listen Anytime link. Well, when you go on that site, you'll see the photos of the distinguished people that are part of our panel. I am sitting here today with a very distinguished gentleman, Dr. Larkin Connolly. And by the way, Larkin's been very busy this week. In fact, I have to tell all of you that Henry's been a very busy man because he has been engineering the Blaze program, the Glenn Beck show from Philadelphia, all this week. So he's been here at the studio from 5 o'clock in the morning, and they've done the show each day, and Larkin's been here observing them. And of course, they're doing another live show from O'Neill's on 3rd Street, and the people are coming out and having a great time with Larkin and Doc Thompson and all of the gang there from The Blaze. It's a network of Glenn Beck, and we're really have a great opportunity of having them here with us this past week. What do you have to say about that, their being here with us?
Well, it's been fun. It's been an awful lot of fun to have them around. They are, I think Henry would agree, they're nuts. I mean, they're completely out of their minds. But what they do is extremely entertaining. It has a little bit of a bent to the right, which I think is, you know, the same thing you would find in speaking or listening to Glenn Beck. But this morning at 5 minutes of 5, when I ran into Henry on the street, we looked at each other and said, "What in God's name are we doing up at this hour in the morning?" But that's what those radio people do.
But I'll tell you, coming down I-95 at 4:30 in the morning, as Henry's been coming down, he's been lucky where that was fast going. By the time I left my house today at 20 of 8, it took me an hour and 15 minutes to get down the expressway. So I don't think we can call it I-95 expressway anymore. Rich has been on that expressway with me when he was here in Philadelphia, so he had an opportunity to see how much construction is going on. And Mark, what's the latest with you there in good old Western New York?
Well, everything's at high speed still. And just talking with the Blaze, Mike, when I was in New York City with the film crew, when the tour bus came up with the American-made movie, we actually went to the Blaze in one of our runs, and it was pretty neat. And Nathan McGill and Vincent Vitario were on the Blaze back in August. So real neat to, I met some of that crew. But we've been up to our new store in our first mall, Mike. We opened a soft opening last Saturday, and somehow my team, we pulled this off. It's 3,400 square foot. We painted it in the last couple weeks and actually vinyl lettered it and got our message, creating and saving jobs in the United States of America for our children's future, all on the walls. And we're doing a grand opening this Saturday. Very excited. The mall loves us. We're already drawing people for them. So, we're actually closing Niagara Falls today because it's for the six-month period. But then we move right into the Eastern Hills Mall here in Buffalo. So very exciting. The holiday season's coming up, and that's a big, big time for retail. So we've got a lot going on. I'm very excited to open the store this Saturday.
And what I want to tell all of our listeners, that when you go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com, when you click on Mark's photo right there on the front page, it goes directly to his store. Mark, congratulations, and I have to tell you, we had a big event this past Sunday in Philadelphia. We had a huge amount of people came out, and we had all sorts of dancers and singers and music. It was a great Polish festival. And, of course, people in my conversation, I did a 3.5-hour show there at the auditorium, And the people absolutely want to compliment Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, and Mark Andel for helping me to do this weekly broadcast and bring people together. Rich, you don't have any idea how people have you involved with the Logis Hotel, Wojcik Hotel in Poland. They keep asking me if you're some relative of them. I said, I don't know. I don't think so, but I'm sure, you know, if there's a way to find out if he's part owner of the Hotel Logis in Krakow, Poland, I'll make sure I let you know.
Oh, Michael, good morning, guys. First off, Lark and Mark, everyone, to listeners. Michael, if I am, I haven't seen the checks yet, so maybe I'm in somebody's will. I'll get a nice call one day, and hell, I'll take it into Polish zlotys anyway. Good. It's still a decent currency exchange with our U.S. dollar, but things are good down here overall. And for Henry and Larkin, I'm gonna check out the broadcast you guys have been working on. I wanted to let you know also that we are at work down here with Life Is My Movie to get some Miami viewings of the American-made movie, and I think we're pretty much at the finish line now to just finalize everything to get some viewings down here. Very excited about that.
Well, I'm waiting to get permission to start using it because I want to bring it to some of our community meetings and let people talk about it. And also, that's a great way to get people to speak about their own situations. In fact, today, what I was going to say is, you know, we've been through some very difficult times in the United States. And in order for us to move up the step on the ladder, we have to really get more supporters of the Buy American Made campaign. Through our movement, I'm seeing such action like I've never imagined. People come up to me at these events and they say, I read your commentaries in the newspapers, I listen to your broadcast, I hear you on some of the other programs in different states. So it's really good to know that we're making this kind of impact. Today, I'd like to discuss a few of the questions that I'm often asked by the people that I meet in my travels, and I'm going to ask each one of you to give me your opinions. In fact, I told them that I'm going to discuss that today during the broadcast and see, let them hear from you, because they're always hearing from me. On my shows, I really, you know, have the Blihosh side of things. But I'm going to ask today a question of each one of you. First of all, why did the American people, Larkin, not react as they saw the industries closing in America? They were driving past all these empty buildings. They saw their sons and their daughters unemployed, underemployed. What do you think? Why was there no reaction from the people?
Well, first of all, in a free economy, the object is to buy something as cheaply as you possibly can and sell it for a good margin, so that if you follow the dollar, if you follow the money, as they say, there was good reason, because in many cases, as this evolution was happening, big boxers and even small businesses were making a lot more money because there was obviously more margin involved in what they sold. It was, you know, well after the whole thing came to fruition, the whole change happened, that we realized that what we sacrificed in order to get a better margin or, you know, a better business model were American jobs. And by the time we recognized that, the horse was already out of the stable.
Yes. In fact, Mark said something during last weekend's broadcast, and I want to say you said something which is beyond anything I remembered, but as I was told by people, I liked it even more. They said, Mark said, Americans can guarantee the quality of everything they produce. Do you remember that statement?
Yes. Yeah. You know, we try to lead with quality, and a lot of times, you know, we forget we made the best products in the world at one point, and we still have a lot of good products, but a lot of people went to the throwaway world, like Larkin's talking, and they lead with greed now. A lot of the big companies, we're all about the dollar and not about quality, and we've got to retrain our children and whatnot to not just throw away things, but to keep them, respect them, and respect that quality product. But we always try to push quality. It takes a lot, but generally somebody wants to buy a quality item. Again, if we talked about our garden hose or our grill, it's a top-end product, but you buy one of them, and you keep it, you take care of it, you pass it down.
Now, Mark, I'm going to ask you this. You've been working there for 20 years in Western New York. How did this thing start where you were to start to wind down when the job started to leave? What was the reaction of the people that you saw? Can you give me an idea?
Well, it's funny. We talk about, I've been general welding, and it'll be 25 years coming this next August. Started out of my father's garage in 85, but my dad, again, was an iron worker and worked at Ford, so he's seen Buffalo, change. He always, blames here, like the St. Lawrence Seaway opened up in Buffalo. It changed, the shipping routes and logistically. But I just see, people even throughout my 20 years or 24 years, I was asked, I made these wall mounts and parts for this PVC plant that we shipped to six regional support centers across the country. And I was always, approached by people and said, hey, I could take that part and make it in China or make it overseas for you for, $1 compared to your $10 and or better. But I never went that way, but it was always because it was the money driver, the greed. But it was money at first. You're making more money, but they didn't really know they were eating their own hand, I don't think, Mike.
That's right.
As they were growing, and that's what you see, and people just did it. I've had friends that moved their families to China, and I would never consider that, but that's how, as it was growing and people were finding out, boy, you can have this made overseas. But they had a lot of problems. I just came out of a meeting today, Mike, with Cindy that runs that National Hardware Show in Vegas, and she actually just flew in from Connecticut to meet us, and we weren't sure why. But she liked us so much at this show in Vegas last year that they want us to be a show sponsor for the Made in America section. She just flew in. I just left her 10 minutes ago and had a two-hour meeting this morning. So we are going to be in that show. But it was neat to be asked. It was neat that we represented the Made in America movement. I told her about your show. She's going to contact you, Mike. I told her about the movie. They might want to play a part of that movie at this show because you have 17,000 buyers. So it was neat that the movement's alive, well. Consumers are still demanding it, or else you wouldn't have the Made in America sections at this largest show. It's 600,000 square foot. McCormick Place is 1.1 million, but where they have it now is 600,000 square foot. So it was honored. She just met me, like I said, a half hour ago, and it was neat to become a sponsor of that show in that section.
And Mark, would you say that most people did not realize that they were biting their own hand as this was happening, outsourcing?
Absolutely. As I don't think they realized throughout the years what was happening until now. Manufacturing drives every economy. And I think now they see it. Of course, we pay for it, and our children are going to pay for it. But no, I don't think they originally knew how it was going to come down by going over and pulling over and how fast that vacuum, that happened and how many people actually left the country and everything started to shift overseas.
Now, the person that went to China, did they stay there longer or did they come back?
They would live there. The couple of them lived there to make their money and then come back here. Yeah, they still wanted to come back here. And that tells you the great country we live in. They didn't want to leave it for long.
There was a lot of political rhetoric about outsourcing in the 80s, 90s, the millennium. Outsourcing was a great subject, was great political fodder, but nobody really did anything about it. Nobody did anything to kind of curb it. It was just discussion. And we go back to my brother-in-law's comment, a free economy. We have to stand up for a free economy.
Yes, we have to, as long as we stand up also, and we'll get into that during later our healthcare issue. But, Rich, now, you were from New York, and how did you see that as a young man? Did you see stores closing, manufacturing facilities closing, and what did you see was the reaction of people from where you were?
Well, I think that Mark and you guys are really covering these bases pretty well, and we because of cheaper labor and cheaper costs of manufacturing is why our consumption culture right now, because remember 70% consumer spend, our economy 70% is spending, because of the cheap labor, etc., is where we've we've shifted from a buy something that's more expensive that'll last to buy something cheaper that's essentially replaceable relatively soon. And that's tied in very well to the cheap labor model. And I thought the Made in America film actually talked about this very well.
Mm-hmm.
When it was talked about, when America totally closed its borders for manufacturing, our growth suffered. Now, the opposite of that is essentially what we're in now, which is everything is all over the place, and the borders are essentially entirely open. And we talk a lot on the show, guys, about balance. Mark, you've talked about a trade balance. Michael Lark and all of us have talked about this, about the balance of it. And American, when you think about a lot of what I would consider somewhat higher-end American-made goods, they do cost more because their quality is higher. But if you think about the average thing that we buy, guys, every day, just look around your houses, they're essentially consumables. They're meant to be replaced. Even our cell phones, for example, which America loves our cell phones, right? We have so many cell phones to choose from. I have a contact at a major telecom company who told me that they have their statistics that Americans replace their phones every 22 months. So even something that's a little bit on the mid-higher-end side of electronics, which, of course, are not made here, except for this new Motorola phone, Michael, which, by the way, is assembled here, FYI.
90%, though, is made abroad.
Well, the parts are made overseas.
Yeah, see, that I believe me, Rich, when you first brought that to my attention, I went immediately to the Verizon store. And when I entered, I questioned everything. And, you know, sometimes I like to aggravate a little bit. Well, believe me, they were so furious. They had the manager come over, and he told me that this is the way of the new world and this and that. And I said, well, I'm walking with an old phone because I made a commitment to buy American. And I said, one of the members of our radio panel is telling me that the Motorola X is all American-made, and he said, nothing yet will be American-made. He says, you're talking 2 years down the line. Now, I don't know if my six-year phone is going to hold up 2 years down the line, but, you know, Motorola X has got to do something about it. Really got to do something.
And, Michael, I'm not, by the way, just so everyone listening knows, Motorola phones are owned by Google. I am in no way here to endorse any company. However, I will give them my checking and routing account number if they want me to endorse, but I'm not endorsing any company here on the show. I'm just to throw it out there and to mention this. But we have to, as a nation collectively, we need to sell the Made in America theme.
And
so Mark, and when you were at that show and you met the furniture maker who very prominently displayed the fact that his goods were made here. If we sell that theme, then people will begin to what I think they once did, which is our everyday consumable items, many of which are not made here. If we keep selling that Made in America theme, people will start to, I believe, shift their way of thinking. And even the day-to-day stuff that we buy, that we consume and dispose of, when it's American-made, even if it's a little bit more, I do think there's a very good chance that if culturally we keep pushing this mindset, that people will begin to adopt it. But we've, as you guys know, we have a lot of competition around the world right now. And at one time, we didn't. And now we do.
And it's,
because we do, what are we going to do about it in the future? That's the key.
We're going to have to learn how to compete. I don't think there's any question of that. And I think it's got to go way beyond emotion. I mean, emotion is not going to bring industry back and manufacturing back to our shores. Good, solid thinking, learning what our advantages are with transportation and the quickness with which we can deliver product. All the positive things have to be played up. This is not, I know for sure, and Rich's instance and Mark's instance, that we're not playing a string instrument trying to play on the hearts of Americans and get them to buy American. It has to come back in a logical business model fashion.
Right, we're talking the bread and butter issues.
Right.
So and now many of the people talking about transportation, many of the people in my discussions with them say, you know, our roads are so bad and all. And I say, yes. However, much of the money that could be directed to our roads is being used for other issues, including unemployment and Medicare, Medicaid, and everything else. But if we had double the amount of people that are looking for jobs employed, you'd have all that additional tax money circulating in the system, and you'd have more gas sold, you'd have more people going out. But because people don't understand, guys, why America's leaders, but mainly America's consumers, permitted so many of our products to leave the country. They themselves were employed by these companies, and they wanted their children to be employed, whether they were in research and development or management or everything else that comes to make a good product to get it on the street. But they say there's nothing left. So how can we, as this panel, this group of people supporting American workers, do even more? We saw through the budget process and the sequestration and everything else that the national leaders are simply not doing anything. So it's left to us, the little guys, to really go out there and shake the bush. And hopefully some money will come from that by shaking it, because the people have to go out and spend their money on American made. When I was at the store just the other day buying Halloween candy, one of the managers said to me, he said, a lot of people are looking at labels like we never, ever imagined they would. And they are speaking up, and not like mice, but like monsters now. And that's what I like to hear. And this is what has to continue. Mark's movie made a very important point. The very beginning of the movie showed what we were and what happened to our beautiful industries. Those buildings are vacant, and those are all over the country. It's just not in Detroit. These are all over the country. I asked someone who was going to Washington last weekend to take a look at all of the empty, beautiful, beautiful facilities that are empty now along the train trail from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. And they came back and they said, I can't believe it. And there's also something else on the sides of the railroad tracks, filth. And we don't have people that can go out there and clean up the place. The train stations need to be painted up, fixed up. We can't do anything because our jobs are elsewhere, and that means our tax dollars are out of the picture, out of our economy.
And Mark touched on it a little bit. When I started in my corporate life many years ago.
Not that many, Larkin.
Several decades ago. You know, I worked in the oil industry, and we spent an inordinate amount of time each year planning. We had a one-year plan, a one-year plan and budget. We had a five-year plan, a 10-year plan. A lot of it was, a lot of conjecture, but we had a plan. We knew where we wanted to be. We knew that money we were investing today was going to deliver 5 and 10 years from now, and, you know, exactly how we were going to treat that. Right now, most major corporations and their senior officers live in a world of just totally instant gratification. They don't plan past this Friday. And if they can make a deal that will cut 5 cents out of the widget that they're selling, but in some way reduces the quality of that product, they don't care. It's that instant gratification. I'm showing my shareholders that I'm making them more money. And we just spend no time whatsoever looking down the road and deciding where we're going and where we want to be in 10 years, even a year. Lord, some of these people, I'd be happy if they'd look 3 months down the road.
Right. I see that people are all telling me, Michael, how do we get after federal, state, and local people to really start supporting only American-made products? Say for the next 3 years, every contract that they do has to be American-made. When we were talking to Greg from Gas Buddy, he was telling us how they're buying all this Chinese steel and all. This should be totally out of the question. We also heard in recent weeks that the main internet site for the affordable health care is now governed by a firm in Canada, and it was accepted with a no-bids contract and allowed to happen. This is doesn't make sense because the president's wife went to school with this person, and now they're operating a company in Canada. These are the kinds of things that should be no-nos. And our tax dollars shouldn't be putting any money out for anything that's going to any individual's friend. It should be done on a quote basis. Before, in the city of Philadelphia, I will say this, and I'm sure it's still this way, you used to have three quotes for every project that you were looking to complete. I'm sure that is the way it is today.
And you used to have to compare apples to apples.
Right. And now it's just who you know, and, you know, it came, you were the first one to email me the proposal, so it's accepted, and the other one was 2 hours late sending me the email, and this doesn't make sense. This is really killing our people. But our people also are asking me, what do I feel that America's leaders thought the people were going to do to earn a living once all the established industries and jobs were outsourced around the world? How did they think that the people were going to make money? Mark, did anybody in your area, as they were losing their jobs, have success?
No, you know, and it hurts your whole community, as you know. It's a spider web effect when the manufacturers close down, your bars, restaurants, hotels. And that's what I love about the movie, guys, the American-made movie. It lets people, it develops an understanding. I think that's what we have to do, continue to tell people the story and have them gain an understanding of what happened, where we are, and where we're going. And if we don't fix it, we're going to have major problems, because a lot of people just don't understand. And that's what I love about the movie. It develops that, if you can get them to watch it, they get that understanding. But, Mike, yeah, in this area, I've watched Buffalo especially, you know, the steel plant, Bethlehem Steel alone leaving the area, and how much that was a little city in itself in Buffalo, Bethlehem Steel, and when that pulled out. And it's a shame most of our steel companies went overseas. But that's what we've got to keep doing with the Made in America. Made in America, the movement helps everything. It helps manufacturers. It helps the people in the communities. It creates, we need skilled workers to, you know, run these factories. We got to bring back that drive and ambition. And you got to be hungry to build it here. And that's what I'm seeing. Even in our shop, I've got a new grill, and we're welding it. But then, you know, we're looking at new technology. Like Larkin said, we got to think enough. You know, there's old metal spinning technology that you could spin metal, and it's a way to form it without welding. And it's relatively cheap. I'm looking at, you know, 3D printing's a way of the future. We've got to get this system and get out of this negative mode also and get positive.
And, you know, that's very true. And as I speak to people, I ask them, when they say to me that I should be doing more to promote the American-made movie, I'm saying, and also American-made issues, I say to them, I am. I'm going to get the movie. I'm going to present it here as soon as they have permission to release it for distribution. And I am also promoting the Buy American Made campaign for a number of years. But then I turn the question around and I ask them, when you saw outsourcing take over, what did you do? Did you speak up then? Are you speaking up now? Are you asking others to support the Buy American Made campaign? Are you directing more of your dollars to products made in the USA? So these are questions that we have to tell people to ask our supporters, because it is a growing movement, but it really has to be even bigger in the future if we're going to get at least 50-50 of everything that we have in our stores available. I know that our merchandisers are starting to really get the message. As people are going to the stores, they're reconsidering their purchasing. They're saying, well, maybe I don't need it now. I can't find anything American made. I'm embarrassed to go home to my wife or my husband who's pushing the American made movement with a foreign product. First thing they say is, well, did you find anything American made? No, I didn't. Well, then why did you buy it? We didn't need it. We could have done without it. That's what I like to hear, and that's what we need to do and see more of in the future.
And, Mike, I think the film crew did a great job. What is your part? And that's what you're talking about. What is your part? You know, consumerism is a great, you know, has a lot of power for rebuilding our future. And, you know, they're threatening our way of life, you know, the oversized seas competition. If we don't grab a hold of it and make a balance and become 50-50, we're not going to have the, you know, the future isn't going to be like we once had. So I think being, you know, making people now, we've come a long way even on the radio show and with our stores and our movement and our talk, but we've got to make people get involved.
Yes, and getting
it's time.
Getting people to focus. I have to tell you this, I do see more companies on their advertising and on their packaging putting a little American flags proudly made in the USA. That's happening, and I think that 2014 is really going to be a big year for American made. But there is a problem that we've talked about a couple of months ago. In the fact is, we still don't have enough skilled workers. So getting the school systems is another thing that our listeners have to do, and make sure that they call their school board. Don't be afraid to speak up. For a long time, Americans were afraid to say anything. They felt they were out of place. They were bossy. They could be knocked down. Those days are over. Unless you speak up, you're not going to get anything.
Mike, one thing in our business first here, a popular magazine or a newspaper, is a help wanted skilled welders. You know, it said a shortage of trained welders has Western New York manufacturers wondering where the next generation of workers will come from as the demand for these skills heats up. There's 450,000 welders in the U.S., and the average age is 55. And the welders under 35 is like 20%. But there's such a shortage, it made front page of the newspaper here. So what we're talking about, it has to happen. You can't grow without having skilled workers.
And the school boards have to be a part of this, too. There was a school board meeting in New Jersey recently, and at the meeting, they were not only talking about money, but some of the people started to talk about changing curriculums to be in tune with what's happening in America now. If we're going to bring industries back, they need qualified people to fill those jobs. You can have industries come back, but if they're going to have to, you know, downsize because they can't find qualified people, then that's also not a good thing. And our local school boards, too, they all have to get with the program. A few weeks ago, I had a commentary out about liberal arts and industrial arts, and people said this was good. This is what the school board should be doing. How do you get to these people? And I said, well, the school boards actually are there to assist you. You have to go to the meetings and say the curriculum you're offering with the liberal arts only is not doing the trick. And I notice here in Philadelphia, the schools that are offering more industrial arts and the trades are doing much better. And in fact, I hear them advertising on our local radio programs, which really cheers me up. I may have to contact them and maybe get them on the show. That's what we need to see. Mark, you should never be looking for someone with qualifications. This doesn't make sense in the greatest country on earth.
You know, Mike, we just started our welding program 6 weeks ago. My guys finished the first course. I've taken four guys that aren't as talented. I call them B welders compared to A welders. And we ran them through a welding course that we designed to enhance them. And these people want to learn. They want to change. I love to see people that want to help themselves. And it was great the last 4 weeks we've worked on it. But in that article, too, not only are we a shortage of skilled workers, one of the gentlemen was 25 years old, was sick of being laid off, unemployed, and noticed that they're looking for skilled workers, so went and said, geez, maybe I'll become a welder. I just met a gentleman off the bus that is from Philadelphia, or he's from Pittsburgh, outside of Pittsburgh, and he said the shale gas is growing so quick around there. A lot of the major companies, and he gave me the two companies' names, they will pay for, if you can pass the drug, tests and whatnot, and you're a good person, want to learn, they'll cover your community college in welding or in manufacturing or in some trade. So it is happening, and we just got to keep it in front that that's an area that is growing, and the schools have to accept it, parents have to accept it, guidance counselors have to tell the kids this is a choice.
And you know, Mark, as you're saying that, I'm thinking to myself, we as national taxpayers pay a portion of education from our federal dollars. It's our elected officials, another bong show, a dong show, gong show, whatever you want to call it, where are they saying we have to change our curriculums because people throughout the world now have more skills than the American people with all of our great educational institutions? That, to me, doesn't make sense.
And what they came up with the shutdown just bothers me more and more every day because it hurt me on my military projects, pushed them out probably into 2014. But if that's the best they can come up with in a tough economy is to shut down, that's just pathetic.
And really nothing was accomplished. Absolutely nothing. In fact, what some of the actions, and when I come back from acknowledging a few of our sponsors, I'm going to ask that Rich and Larkin and myself, along with Dr. Logis, if we could talk a little bit about this Affordable Care Act, because people everywhere I go don't know what's going to happen to them. Most of the people, luckily, are on an independent provider system like your employees would have, Mark, and our employees would be on. So they're not going to be as screwed up as most of the people. But many of the people, especially the elderly, they keep seeing all this stuff on television and they think that their Medicare is going to be canceled. And the next thing you know, they're going to have to go on the internet and apply for affordable health care and all that. They simply don't understand. And what is sad is that no one came out 6 months in advance and lectured the people as to exactly what's going to happen. October the 1st came. The next thing you know, here we are with this website that doesn't work. People that don't understand anything. The people on the television and cable programs are attacking one another, but still no one's explaining anything. And being in the field of social services, my job is to comfort people, especially those that are out of a job, try to find them a job, get them to some job training programs. But this is only frustrating them all the more. Gentlemen, I will be back in a few minutes after I acknowledge some of our sponsors. First, I would like to mention that this weekend is the first weekend of the month, and it's National Small Business Weekend, another opportunity for us to help our local businesses. And why do we always promote National Small Business Weekend the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of every month? Well, because it keeps local residents employed, local delivery and marketing services are utilized. It creates and supports a vibrant economy, which Mark knows how important that is. And local, state, and federal taxes are collected. And it also allows customers at those stores to speak up that they would like to see more American-made products. If anyone is interested in learning more about National Small Business Weekend, they can go to our internet site at nationalsmallbusinessweekend.com. And also, we had a very special event taking place on Sunday. We marked the 140th anniversary of the PRCUA, and Mr. Joseph Drobot was in Philadelphia for that particular event. And also, I'd like to acknowledge Serena's Auto Body Shop, and they have two locations in Philadelphia. One is at 6201 Oxford Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. The other is at 691 Bethlehem Pike in Montgomeryville, Pennsylvania. And best wishes also to our listeners from Mr. George Szymański Jr., attorney at law, and from Dr. Włodzimierz Zinn of Everest Dental, located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. Also, Mr. Frank Spula, who is the national president of the PNA, the Polish National Alliance, wishes all of our listeners the very best, and he encourages you to go out and support American made. Also, Mr. Jan Majewski from Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928, wants to wish you the very best, and look for Giorgio everywhere you shop across the USA. Greetings as well from the Sugar House Casino, located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. You can check them out at sugarhousecasino.com, where Philly loves a winner. Best wishes also, and thanks for supporting American Made, from Mr. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, and he has two offices in Philadelphia. You can give him a call at 215-564-1866. And if you have dental needs, remember that Dr. Eva Machak has two offices in Philadelphia. For more information, give her a call at 215-739-2787. And looking to do some repairs around the house? Well, Father and Son Builder serves the Philadelphia area. Give them a call at 215-634-7800. Greg Matiaszek is the owner. You can also check them out on the internet at fatherandsonbuilders.com. And also the Kaharsky family of Polka Deli, located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, invites you to stop by their store. For more information, you can give them a call at 215-634-3750. And the ever-popular Leon Mankowski Attorneys at Law's office is located at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue in Port Richmond. You can give him a call at 215-739-8521. And Mr. Martin Bednarek, who is the president of Washington Savings Bank, Kazimierz Wielki, wants to remind you that they have five locations in Philadelphia to serve you. Do stop by the Washington office near you and make sure you let them know that you hear about them on our radio broadcast. Also, the Polish American Travel Service is located at 2714 East Allegheny Avenue. They invite you to contact them for all of your travel needs. And also, thanks for supporting American workers from Yolanda Konopacka DeCipio, attorney at law. For more information, you can give her a call at 215-423-4824. And also, Pat's Auto Tags is located at 2536 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. For all of your Pennsylvania Department of Motor Vehicle needs, call Pat's Auto Tags at 215-427-1820. Well, ladies and gentlemen, last week we started on the Affordable Care Act, and I want to give a few of my own opinions, and I'm going to ask Larkin, Rich, and Mark to speak up here. As I said last week, because we live in America, the land of the free, the government should not force any person to buy anything, and nor should any person be fined if they don't want to buy a particular plan or anything else. That's what freedom of choice is all about. What would you say to that as a businessman and as an insurance provider, Mr. Mark Andel?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you, Mike. I don't want to be forced anything on me, especially in these tough economic times where I have to control costs, and every day I'm living and breathing these real times and how tough it is to make a dollar with my high expenses, you know, in manufacturing in the U.S. So I don't want to be forced anything, you know, down my throat that I can't pull. Like, I want to be able to pay my mortgage on my building before I'd be mandated to pay health insurance. I just think, you know, the more I'm listening and hearing around what's going on, I know the system, there's a lot of problems with the system, with their websites and crashes. And I talked to a buddy that signed up for a special plan, but he didn't get the funding that he thought. Again, I don't know. There's so much confusion and uncertainty. They need to take that year, figure out what's in it themselves, and then present it to the people in a format we could read and understand. And I do not like being mandated. I need choices to move and react and not pay what I deem necessary at that point in time.
That's right. What you deem necessary is the bottom line, not what some national elected leader places upon you. This is really just another stab in the back to our small businesses who really don't know what's going on. Many of them only give a small portion or maybe a half of their insurance money to their people. And now I understand that millions of Americans will be losing their present health care because it's not what government feels is good enough. Is that what you're hearing, Rich?
Well, Michael, a few things. And to add to your comment earlier about the no-bid contract, That is correct. It is important to note that the firm that did the site was approved for no-bid business under President George W. Bush. So every opportunity I get to talk about how the two parties are basically the same thing, which I find myself doing a hell of a lot every day with factual evidence, not how I feel or emotion.
Right, it's all facts.
Right, it's important to note that this company could get no-bid business because a Republican president approved it and a Democrat president affirmed it. So really, same thing. So that's that aspect of it. The primary goal of this health law was to get people without insurance insured. When the president said, if you have your current plan, you'll be able to keep it, and now people are saying, well, I'm getting notices that I can't keep it. Here's the reason why, Michael. The reason why is because the health care law mandates minimum requirements for what's considered a semi or comprehensive health care plan. Those people who are getting cancellation notices, their policies don't include things like maternity leave and certain prescription benefits. That's why their policies are getting dropped. Those insurance companies are sending letters saying your current policy doesn't meet the requirements of the ACA. Give us a call so we can discuss your options. Those who are in group insurance plans already are going to be able to keep their plans. Now, here's the big question.
But that's group. That's the group plans.
That's a group plan. Right. Now, me as a small business owner, see, I get screwed and tattooed every step along the way because when my wife and I, our last 2 years in New York, we're both in our 30s, no kids, no health ailments. My wife and I paid $24,000 for 2 years of health care, Mike, for having a, quote, comprehensive. And as I like to remind everybody I know who works, hey, guess what? You already pay for health care. It's called Medicare. It comes out of your paycheck. Mark, do your employees get Medicare taken out of their checks?
Absolutely.
Okay. And do they all have health care?
Yes.
Okay, because you provide it and you pay a contribution toward it. How many times are we going to have to pay for health care, guys, in America? You have taxes, then you have premiums, then you have co-pays. And by the way, make sure you have a good plan, because if you don't, good luck getting the claim paid. You're better off going to the casino, gambling the money away. So, Michael, that's why people are getting notices. It's for that reason. So the question mark in all of this is those who have group plans, though, guys, keep in mind, their plans are administered typically by the insurance companies. And the same people who are going on the exchanges are going to buy insurance from those same companies. So if those in the group plan see their costs rise, insurance companies don't make money by paying claims, right? They make money by a combination of different actuarial requirements, such as paying a certain amount of claims, denying a certain amount of claims, charging somebody X amount of money because of ailments. Those with pre-existing conditions, unless things change, are supposed to soon be able to get insurance. And what's going to happen, I think most likely, is those who are already in plans or getting insurance for the first time are going to certainly pay higher than they would be if they were in group insurance. But paying higher, guys, already existed before this law.
Right.
I mean, I can't participate in group health care. That's why I paid $24,000 over 2 years.
And Rick,
that's a lot of damn money. 2 years of, you know, in their 30s with no kids, no health ailment.
Rich, when you say $12,000 a year, that's, people think we're making that up. That's $1,000 a month. You pay that. I know
that's
that,
right.
And that doesn't include dental.
And I had to fight every damn claim to get it paid, tooth and nail. So you know, fighting to the very end. To this day, I haven't had that plan for 2 years, guys. To this day, I still get letters from the doctors saying insurance didn't pay. Listen, we need a single-payer health care system. If you have insurance, you choose the doctor. You choose the hospital. You choose the facility. The ones who are good are going to get busy. They'll have to train. They'll have to hire. The ones who don't got to get on the yachts and get out to sea and ponder what they're going to do. They're either going to change their business or they're going to get better. That is free market. We talk a lot about competition on our show.
Right. And I think the government should totally be out of it.
Single, Michael, health insurance companies don't allow. You know how many people I know go to a doctor whom they don't like because his or her insurance happens to be taken by that doctor, and they can't find another doctor within a 1 or 2 hour mile radius. And again, every time I get a chance to spew my propaganda about competition, you guys know where I'm going with it. We need more competition in our elections.
Absolutely.
More competition means more of a dissemination of ideas. And I'm not talking just presidential and congressional elections. I'm talking down, Michael, to the very school board elections that you had a commentary about. We need more competition. We need more accessibility. That will result in more capable candidates spreading their ideas. Look, I'm going to say the voters of our country want this. I truly believe that the voters of our country want it. In fact, I'd even go as far as to say that half the people who don't vote in our country, a majority of them, they want it also. And I'm going to ride that. That's my American-made contribution financially. I'm going to buy American-made every chance I can get.
Now, you're saying Americans would want a single-payer plan. Is that what you're saying?
Sorry. Say again, Michael?
That is what you're saying. America's people would want a single
I don't think there's any other health care solution for our country. Will it be perfect? No. Is any system perfect? No. But why can't we as a nation look around at the best health systems around the world and adopt the best attributes?
And you're saying a single payer, Rich, you're saying single payer is that system?
Larkin, unless there is, in my opinion, yes. In my opinion, now is it perfect? No.
Sort of a national Medicare system.
So here's the deal. Two comments I'll make. First of all, it would take you 15 years. Maybe 10 years to evolve 6% of our economy into a one-payer system. You're not going to get up December 1st and throw a switch and say, up, everything's fixed. We got a single-payer system. It's called hospital care, whatever. That's not even an arguable point. That 6% of our economy is involved here. It's been placed in the hands of our government. 6%. Of our GDP, that would be my first comment. Secondly, if you would take the legal issue, if you would take the suing, if you would take the lawyers out of medical care, a lot of this would straighten out. If you would take HIPAA and all those foolish laws that the federal government passed about systems that have to be built into hospitals, where they had to hire 60 and 70 people to keep all of these files secret so nobody could see them, and you know.
And now they want to put everything online so you could see it wherever you are.
Exactly.
That's one of the things that concerns me. People are concerned about putting their information online because it's not secure. And by the way, are those people accepting your telephone calls or watching what you're putting on the internet? Are they licensed and secure? We have no idea.
So, and secondly, to that very end, we need to allow, as much as they don't want to, we need to allow and make the health providers, the Blue Crosses of the world, compete on a national basis. This Blue Cross of New Jersey, Blue Cross of Pennsylvania, Blue Cross of Delaware, Hokum is exactly that, and that has so much to do with driving up the prices and, as they say, trying to actuarially bring things down to a specific demographic. Get the heck out of here. They should be able to compete across the board.
Larkin, let me say first to everything you said, very valid points. And let's say for argument's sake, it will take 15 years. My answer is, when do we get started? I mean, we've been in Iraq for over that amount of time. We'll be in Afghanistan for that amount of time. We spent over $6 trillion just in those two wars. When do we get started?
Right. Hey, I agree. In fact, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to see everyone subpoenaed from this entire health care act, all the people involved. I'd like to know, let them come before the House and Senate and answer all the questions.
They'll lay Kathleen Sebelius on it. They won't even show up. They'll tell you they're too busy to even come down and speak in front of Congress when they're asked to come down.
Well, I mean, they'd have to be subpoenaed, and this would have to be something that the American people want settled. First of all, let me say this because our time is getting short today. The older people there is no change in your Medicare whatsoever. Don't be concerned. That is one of the things that I hear from people. Their children ask, my mom is worried about what is she going to have to do to continue her Medicare? Nothing. You're not involved. It's Michael. Everyone under the age of Medicare that's put in this squeeze. I'd like to see them all brought before a congressional hearing and let us know exactly who put the act together. What was their statistics? What was the outcome after 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? What did they expect to accomplish? And if they can't provide that in those hearings, the whole thing should be canceled.
They knew when they put this plan together that they needed young people to make all of the actuarial tables pure. They needed young people to get involved. And they needed people 45 and 48 and 52 years old to comply to a minimum standard, so they had to carry maternity insurance. And a lot of bohunk. I mean, it's just crazy. Why they couldn't come up with a CAFE program that would allow you to pick what you need and pay for it is way beyond me. You know why? Because they have to have the young people who don't need this kind of hokum. They need them out there paying $300 and $400 a month to support the rest of the system.
Yeah, all this health care is doing, it's dividing the people in America. It's wasting our time and our money, and it's prolonging our recession. It's most importantly, it's circus. Nobody knows what's going on. The cable stations are having a field day with it. They're calling the president a liar, his staff a liar. It has to become, dignified once again. I think it's time for all the national health care providers to come and offer their suggestions. I'd like to see the whole thing put on hold. I mean, what do you say to that?
I've been calling for that, and Rich, you have got to have the last minute. But I've been saying that all along. Healthcare passed. We know it's a problem. They passed a system called Obamacare, very ill thought out. They should have stopped it right in their tracks and said, we need to fix this and fix it now.
And
Rich, you get the last
one. Lark and I want to say this. I even object to the point of calling it Obamacare, because we the people pay that. Not any president, not the Bush care, Obamacare, the Hillary care, whatever. We pay it, so it should not be really named after any president or anyone else. We are almost out of time, guys. We're going to have to talk about this health care in a special broadcast next weekend. Are you all on board?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm always on board, Mike.
Because I want to tell you, this is the biggest issue that has riled up our listeners. And by the way, it is an issue that's going to kill all of our small businesses if we don't get it resolved, and get it resolved right quick. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you so much, Larkin. Thank you so much, Mark, for being with us today. I'm sorry we had some callers. We will ask that you call in next week as we continue our efforts to support American workers and America's businesses. Until Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish all of you the very best. David Zenya.
Have a good week, guys.
Thank you, everyone.